ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Coming up, Lav and I break down Cam Davis's victory at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, Phil's beef with the press, and another eventful week for Bryson DeChambeau. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast, presented by Callaway Golf. Normally, this is where we would tell you about John Rahm's equipment he used to win the U.S. Open, but why not hear from the champion himself?
For all those people that might have doubted the manufacturer change, you know, there was a reason why I believed I could get better. And the new ball and the new irons allow me to hit certain shots that I simply wasn't capable before. And it showed, you know, some of those wedge shots and some of those long shots at 8-iron and 1. I mean, being able to hit that shot high with spin, but still go through the wind and hit it short of the pin and many others like that is what allowed me to stay as aggressive. So I need to say a huge thank to that, to the team in Callaway. You know, I gave them a headache. I don't know how many putters they've built for me to find the one I needed. And you know, I'm pretty sure I found the one I need. This one's working really well. So, Joe, thank you for all the hard work. And we got one, boys. So, I guess, second one of the year.
To learn more about Rahm's gear, visit CallawayGolf.com/Rahm. Ryan, happy fourth.
Happy delayed fourth to you, Rex. What did you throw on your grill-smoker combo?
I wasn't home. We visited some friends up in Savannah. I think I sent you some Snapchats about some
you
restaurants
did. Thank
we
you.
Went to. Yeah. But the people we visited, I discovered something new that I really want to try. It's essentially a Caesar salad, but you sort of just slice the lettuce, you know, the romaine lettuce in half, and then you grill it. And, you know, you put oil, salt, and pepper on it and grill it. It was
Did you just call it the romaine lettuce, as in like Brentley romaine?
You and I were just talking about Brentley. So, yeah, I just did that.
Is this like Peter Mel? What did you call him? Peter
Malnati. Move on.
So you did not get to grill, but you saw someone grill a salad. That was your big takeaway from the weekend?
It was really good. Like, I can't wait to try it. I know it's way out of your league because you're an expert at this, but I really enjoyed it.
I mean grilled salad and grilled romaine lettuce, as long as you get the big leaves of it, it is terrific. It just adds a little bit of extra punch to what can be a pretty mundane appetizer. I was like you, I was not at my house, but Rex, unlike you, I came prepared. And so my in-laws have a place at Reynolds Lake Oconee. Very nice. We like going there 4 to 6 times a year. And I am so dedicated to the craft, Rex, that I have actually brought two grills and smokers up there to a house that is not my own, which is my in-laws' second place. And so on, let's see, Sunday, I had big aspirations. I wanted to do ribs. Maybe I'll do a little bit of pulled pork. At the very least, smoke a chicken. But no, since it wasn't my house, I played by others' rules. And all we had was 4 measly chicken thighs, 8 brisket burgers, which were delicious, and just some generic hot dogs that I threw on the Weber kettle. So it was a pretty disappointing put out, I would say, for what is traditionally the biggest grilling day of the year. Although you and I have talked about this before, Thanksgiving is really where the pit masters shine. That's really where you can do just a wide array of dishes on a wide array of smokers. And so really everything's gearing up towards November. That's the time of year that I want to peak. A lot of players want to peak 4 times a year around the majors. I want to peak during Thanksgiving week.
Did you get any feedback from your shameless plug for the LET event last week? That was
not a word. Not a word. Not even a like.
You tagged it, right? I mean, you did all the groveling and begging just like you should, and you got nothing.
Did you see the trophy? The trophy was even better than just the T markers. The trophy was like a miniature big green egg. It just had a stand on it. It was amazing.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the golf. And before we get to Cam Davis's victory, which was another playoff victory and really fun to watch at Detroit Golf Club, which is a really cool spot. It's like one of those places, I think we talked about this last week at River Highlands, sort of one of those underrated
stuff. If you know, you know type of place,
if
right?
You know. But I wanted to start with the two headlines from last week. And I'll start with Brooks Koepka, because the news was Bryson DeChambeau and his caddy split, which ranks right up there in my mind with, you know, dog bites man, because it was inevitable that Tim and Bryson were going to split. That's a very, very demanding job. There's no way he was going to stay on that bag for a prolonged amount of time, because we've seen it. We see it day after day, week after week on the PGA Tour. Bryson's a worker and he's exhausting. And there's a lot of things that need to be done before a round of golf and after a round of golf. And when your guy goes to the range and hits balls into the twilight every single day, that's going to wear on you. So those two.
But it's also one of the most lucrative jobs in golf, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. He got paid well. I don't think Tim's going to be complaining. This goes back to a story that Paul Tesori told me a few years ago. He was on Vijay Singh's bag, which would be the equivalent from another generation of Bryson.
If not more arduous.
I think it's pretty comparable. I was kind of thinking about this last week when someone asked me about it. It's very comparable as far as the amount of work and thought and energy that goes into it. But Paul told me with 1 year that he worked for Vijay, and it was the year that Vijay won 10 times. So you can just kind of do the math and get an idea how much Paul made. Paul had 2 days off the entire year. Even when they were home in Jacksonville, they were at TPC Sawgrass hitting balls, working, grinding.
Yes, that's not Bryson's level. Tim Tucker is not standing on the range at Dallas National as Bryson's going through these marathon range sessions on his off weeks. That's
probably not.
VJ is a whole different level. At a tournament site, yeah, it's probably a little bit more exhausting, but that's ridiculous.
No, I would agree with that. Probably not. I don't see it, but it is a demanding job. And
Of course. Yeah.
The part that got me in all this is Brooks Koepka on social media. And this has gone from just we've blown past beef, and he's just a full-size troll now, right? Like, coming at him after all this caddy news with some social media telling, you know, happy National Caddy Day, congratulating Ricky. And look, Ricky is one of my favorite, Ricky Elliott, Brooks' caddy, one of my favorite people on tour. That being said, Ricky's got to be thinking to himself, come on, man, why you got to drag me into your mess? Like, don't do this to me. And because he has gone beyond just sort of being playful on Twitter. He's just a troll now, is he not?
He's a troll now, but I actually enjoyed this little dig more than some of his previous dalliances on social media, just because he was poking fun. This wasn't life or death. He wasn't, you know, leveling steroid accusations, which is what he did last summer. It wasn't a situation where, you know, he was making fun of or really calling out Bryson's slow play or saying that he just doesn't like him. I mean, this was as lighthearted and as playful as it gets. And I actually enjoyed this one a little bit more than some of his previous digs. That said, I want to go back to this split, because to me, this is one of the most important unions in all of professional golf. I would put it right up there with Jordan Spieth and Michael Greller. I put it right up there with Roy McIlroy and Harry Diamond. There's different dynamics to all these player caddy relationships, but this was one where Bryson had inherent trust and faith in what Tim Tucker was doing. You mentioned all the long hours that they spend, certainly during practice hours, making sure that everything is fine tuned. But Tim Tucker can speak Bryson's language. And as it stands right now, there's probably very few people, if any, on the PGA Tour, certainly on the free agent caddy market, who could speak that same sort of love language as Bryson is doing. And so the timing of the split was certainly curious, and it leads you to believe, even though Bryson's team said that this was a mutual decision and they just kind of grew tired of each other, it certainly seems that with the timing that this was Tim Tucker walking away from the bag. You don't do that otherwise on the eve of the tournament, which was Bryson's title defense in Detroit, 1 week to go until the Open Championship. You still have the Olympics, the playoffs, the Ryder Cup. I mean, these are big, big tournaments in the next couple of weeks. And to have this sort of seismic shift in what is going on in Bryson's world, I think really upended him. And it wasn't a surprise to see him kind of struggle last week with Ben Showman, his club fitter from Cobra Puma, on the bag last week. There's a lot that he needs to get sorted out here in a very short period of time.
No, there's going to be a learning curve for whoever steps in. And I can't imagine that it's going to come to fruition next week at the Open Championship. I can't imagine they've got it figured out by the playoffs. Because as you pointed out, you need to speak Bryson's language, and none of us quite can grasp that. And so the fact that Tim was able to do that, it is going to be an issue going forward. That being said, he eventually lands on a caddy that he can replace him with. But I mean, to your point, I don't think there's any question. I mean, I think this was Tim walking away. And again, I'm not entirely shocked by it, nor do I particularly think that anyone's to blame. Like, in a relationship like this, there is going to be strain. I just listened to you fussing at your wife walking into your office because the TV that she was supposed to set up isn't working. That's a relationship.
She did set it up, and now it's not.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the point here is, in a relationship where you have to have that level of trust, there's going to be strain.
I had trust that this was going to work, and now there's strain.
And now she has strain because you're going to fuss at her before you sit down for the podcast because one of your two TVs in your new office doesn't work. So, but no, I'm not particularly shocked that this happened, and he'll figure it out eventually. But I think this is going to be another thing that Bryson's going to have to deal with. I don't think Bryson's going to end up with his Bones McKay. I don't think he's going to end up with his Harry Diamond. I don't think he's going to end up with his Michael Greller. Because I'm not saying he's not a likable fellow, but that's a tough bag. That's a tough guy to work for, man.
It is. And you have to keep in mind that early on in Bryson's career, he was cycling through caddies trying to find the right one. In fact, he initially hired Tim Tucker in 2017. They split about midway through and then reunited in early 2018 and had been together for all of Bryson's 8 PGA Tour wins, including the U.S. Open last fall. We still have a lot of questions when it comes to Bryson, and quite frankly, we don't have any answers because he didn't speak to the media last week. And this was really one of two player media stories that we had. We're going to first mention Bryson, and then we're going to get to Phil and the week that he had. But Bryson did not talk to the media. So he did have a pre-tournament press conference on Tuesday. That was before this news broke on Thursday morning. He did not speak after his Thursday round, and he did not speak after his Friday round. I'm all for giving players a free pass occasionally. If they shoot a million and they want to blow us off, I get it. But with this particular situation with Bryson, he needed to talk one of those days. And the reason why I think it is threefold. One, he's a top tour player, and top tour players understand their responsibility and their obligation to speak to the press. It's as much of a part of the job as playing by the rules or signing a scorecard. Secondly, he's the defending champion of the tournament. The fans who reporters are proxies for, they want to hear from Bryson. He's the defending champion. The sponsors want to hear from Bryson. The tournament officials want to hear from Bryson. The people of Detroit want to hear from the defending champion. And thirdly, this is a player who, Rex, is literally sponsored by Rocket Mortgage. And yet he did not talk to the media after each of his two rounds. So surely they have to be left wondering what they're actually paying for. Did you have any problem at all with Bryson blowing off the media those 2 days and not discussing? He didn't discuss it on the pre-tournament call for the match either. Do you have any problem with the way that Bryson's handling this?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think any time that you're going to leave something like this hanging out there, you and I, and podcasts and journalists and people everywhere, are going to jump to conclusions without any further information from Bryson or Bryson's camp. The to your point, yes, I think there is an obligation. And you and I talked about this a few weeks ago when it sort of trickled over from tennis, right? And we talked about a professional athlete's responsibility that, yes, there is some sort of responsibility that you have to be accountable to the media on some level. I don't have a problem with a player looking me in the face and saying, nope, not today. Like, you and I both, I think, are on the same page on this one. That I'm
as
fine
long as
that.
They open their mouth and say no.
Absolutely.
I don't want that answer to come from anybody else. I don't want it to come from a PGA Tour media official. I don't want it to come from Bryson's agent. I want Bryson DeChambeau to open his mouth and say, sorry, guys, not today, maybe tomorrow. Perfectly fine.
And I made a point of this a few years ago, because the example that I think the obvious example is Tiger Woods. And there was a few years ago in Charlotte, Tiger decided not to do a pre-tournament press conference and everyone went nuts. Like, well, Tiger has to talk. He's the number one player in the world. Like, he has to talk every week that he plays. And he did, I think he did some sort of social media online thing with fans that day. And I went and I counted, and you and I will be able to understand this. There's a website that transcribes all of the interviews. It's called ASAP. And I counted how many ASAP interviews he had done since he turned pro. And compared to the guy who was number two on the list that I went and counted, he had 10 times more. I think at the time it was like 4,200 interviews he had done through that moment. Second place on that list was Phil Mickelson with 800. Like, it wasn't even close. And I guess my point was, I don't expect an athlete to have to talk, or even the world number one, for example, and Dustin's probably a terrible example, but even the world number one to talk every single week. But there are responsibilities after rounds where you are going to be held accountable. And whether if you shoot a 66 or an 86, you're going to have to answer, even if you're not in the middle of a situation like Bryson found himself with his caddy. And I think that responsibility is starting to be dismissed by the younger generation.
And I'm actually glad you brought up Tiger, because I think that's one of the most underappreciated aspects of him. I mean, you covered him a whole lot longer than I have, probably double the period, just with him starting his pro career in 96. But I would reckon he has probably talked, or probably said no comment, or I'm not going to talk today, probably fewer than 20 times in his PGA Tour career. Do you think that's safe to say? Fewer than 20 times?
Oh, that's safe.
Yeah, I used to say it was around 10. And then, you know, when he was going through his injury issues, he kind of dismissed it, because, you know, what are you going to say after you shoot 78 and are hobbling along? But I would say over Tiger's PGA Tour career, he has not talked to the media after a round probably fewer than 20 times. That is incredible. If you think of Roy McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, any of kind of the big name players of this next generation, Justin Thomas, I would guess that they've already accumulated more than 20 times where they said, no, not talking today. And I think that's just a product of the younger generation. I think it's a product of maybe the players having more power. I mean, no one has held more power over the PGA Tour than Tiger, but I think players are just emboldened by their current stature on the PGA Tour, in the media landscape, just as not just athletes, but kind of pseudo celebrities as well. And I always hear the excuse that social media has made it easier for these guys to kind of push the media away and kind of do it themselves. Except I don't see that at all, Rex. Like, people always said, oh, you know, if Bryson's not going to talk to the media in Detroit, well, he can just go on Instagram, or he can go on Twitter and write his own statement, or have a 1-minute video that he can post to kind of explain himself to his fans. No one's doing that. No one, absolutely no one is doing that. Now, Phil is starting to, because Phil has kind of found his voice on Twitter, but everyone else is too worried of, you know, they're too brand conscious on Twitter to actually devote themselves to any sort of quote unquote media work on social media. So I'm not sure what the answer is here. But it does seem to be getting worse, in the sense that I think players view media as certainly a necessary evil, above all, but also something that can just be easily dismissed or used to their benefit when, you know, they want to sling product or promote themselves or talk about their good play. I don't think it's necessarily a two-way street of I'm going to talk, you know, also after bad rounds, instead of just every time I shoot 66.
Well, and this dovetails with the second headline that you and I wanted to touch on, which was Phil Mickelson and his issues with the press last week. And what was interesting is you and I had a mutual friend that reached out to me last night, who we used to work with together in a former life as magazine writers. And he brought up a very good point, saying that the media is there for good and bad, right? I mean, I think you and I can both agree that, yes, we'd much rather write a Sunday story of guys making birdies and eagles and historic finishes and great victories. There's going to be those stories. There's also going to be the occasional story. I guess the best example is Matthew Wolff that you wrote at the US Open a few weeks ago. A difficult story to write, maybe not the most positive story to write, but I truly believe it was a story that needed to be written. And I thought you did a very good job, not so much, not only for golfchannel.com and the folks who read it and the fans, but for Matthew. I think on some level, he needed to sort of vent and get it out there. And my point was, in this particular case with Phil Mickelson getting angry with the press and what he called a hit piece, which essentially was some court documents that went back essentially two decades, talking about Phil being owed some money for some gambling debts that the guy didn't pay him. And it just was kind of a deep dive into something that happened, like I said, 2 years ago. Again, you can question the timing all you want, but even Phil's own lawyer himself said that there was nothing factually wrong with the story. He just didn't like the timing of it. Well, that's something that even Phil, well, particularly Phil, should understand better than anyone else, that you don't get to choose the content, nor do you get to choose the time when the journalist runs the content. Now, you can consider it a hit piece, but for him to jump onto social media and to try to leverage whatever audience he has against this particular journalist and threaten never to go back to Detroit, I just think it's poor form on Phil's part.
He called the reporter in question, Robert Snell, who's a federal courts reporter for the Detroit News, opportunistic. He said that he and so many of his fellow local media brethren around the country, quote, use famous people when they come to town to increase their own exposure. And so I did a little digging on Robert Snell. He is respected. He is well-connected. He is award-winning. And he has been on this beat, Rex, for more than a decade. And so, in other words, he's long past needing to increase his own exposure through some sort of clickbait article. And Phil's point was that this happens throughout the country. Everywhere he goes, the local media members are trying to write something, whether it's any sort of negative commentary, digging up something from his past, just to sort of have an angle for when the tournament comes to town. You and I have both worked for non-national media outlets. We work for a national media outlet now. Back when I was in college, I worked for the Athens Regional, the Athens Banner Herald. And every year there would be a nationwide tour event. That's the two sisters ago of what is now known as the Corn Ferry Tour. And so we had this Athens Regional Foundation Classic that would happen every April. And it was a big deal. And you'd start planning months in advance. And this is just local journalism 101. You would have every single department in the newsroom kind of thinking of how you can come up with some sort of angle that leads to this comprehensive coverage of this event, right? I'm sure you did the exact same thing for the Orlando Sentinel when Arne's tournament was sure. Right around the corner. It's all hands on deck. Everyone's trying to think of their angle. Now, was this maybe a more unsavory angle than usual? Yeah, probably. Was the timing a little bit odd? Yeah, for sure. But nothing was untrue. It was an interesting story. And quite frankly, it was such a hyper-local story buried behind a paywall that no one would have known if not for Phil amplifying it on social media. No one would have read the story. It would not have become a national headline if Phil did not bring attention to it. And so that leads me to believe that the only reason Phil brought attention to it is because it's embarrassing for him. It's because he got swindled out of $500,000. Yeah, that's nothing to a guy who's made more than $100 million in his career. But it's embarrassing that this happened to him. That is what I think this whole thing boils down to. It's not Phil's crusade against local media and how they do things, because quite frankly, this is the only time I can remember a local media member actually having some sort of unsavory angle when it comes to Phil and him coming to town to play in a tournament like the one last week at Rocket Mortgage. The only thing I can think is that it makes him kind of look clownish that he actually got fooled and got swindled by a guy. That's what I think this really comes down to.
Well, and again, this goes back to the Bryson Tim Tucker story. Like, I don't think anybody was necessarily surprised. I don't think anyone is surprised that Phil Mickelson was involved in some sort of gambling situation. We all know by now that Phil Mickelson likes to gamble when he's on the golf course, and he's not gambling for a little bit of money. The fact it was $500,000, someone got into debt to him and couldn't pay him back. It's juicy. It's kind of interesting. I read the story. I thought, wow, that it's a story that I wouldn't mind writing. And as far as the timing of it, Phil Mickelson has not played a Detroit event since 2002, which is essentially when this happened, when you go back to the court documents. So yes, it's a 2-decade-old story. To your point, he hasn't been there in 2 decades. This was the first time this reporter, this newspaper, this outlet had an opportunity to address
and this. He wasn't sitting on this story for 3 years like, oh boy, I sure hope Phil comes to town so I can write this story. He clearly got tipped off recently. And then rather than run it on like a local or just a random Tuesday in early June, they probably discussed it in the newsroom and said, yeah, this makes sense as part of our comprehensive coverage for the Detroit News for when the Rocket Mortgage comes to town. Like, that's how this happens. That's how this works. It's a comprehensive effort in local newsrooms.
Well, and we've talked about this before, where there is no one in the business, and this includes Tiger Woods, who's able to control the narrative better than Phil Mickelson. I have seen him do it time and time again throughout my entire career, where he is going to be asked questions in pretty much every press conference that he gives that he probably would rather not answer, whatever they're about. And it could be about not having not won the U.S. Open, his bad relationship with the USGA, gambling, whatever the case may be. No one is better at spinning this in a different direction than Phil Mickelson. He has made an art form out of that. So the idea now that he has chosen that I'm not even going to do that anymore, I'm just going to go directly to the consumer and tell them that I'm not coming back to Detroit unless you get a petition that's signed by 5,000 people and everyone.
No, 50,000.
Sorry, 50,000 people and everyone does a random act of kindness. I like the premise. Like, it's a cool idea. Let's all do a random act of kindness a day. The fact you're leveraging your name against a tour event just because of something a reporter, as you pointed out, wrote something that probably 90% of the public in Detroit would have no idea that was ever even reported. Like, that seems to me he overstepped the line. Like, it was a line that didn't need to be crossed, and he definitely crossed it.
Yeah, this seems like one of the rare miscalculations of Phil. As you said, he can spin anything. He typically has an agenda if he's opening his mouth. And the fact of the matter is, I think he woefully underestimated the story. And by the way, last I checked, he only has about 12,000 people signing that petition. So we might not be getting Phil Mickelson at Detroit Golf Club next year, where, of course, he finished tied for 74th in Detroit last week. Now, the winner last week was Cam Davis, 26-year-old Australian, if you've never heard of him. He is I'd say a solid, if unspectacular, PGA Tour player throughout his career. He won an Aussie Open in 2017. He won on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2018. And he's just kind of been, not necessarily going through the motions, but playing well enough to pop up here and there, not doing anything spectacular. But he was the winner in Detroit, beating not just your boy Troy Merritt in a five-hole playoff, but also Joaquin Niemann, who did not make a bogey for 72 holes of regulation, drops a shot on the first extra hole and bows out. What was your takeaway besides the Bryson and the Phil news, which to me was kind of the main headlines from the Rocket Mortgage Week? What was your kind of main headline for how Sunday played out?
I would agree. I think those were the two biggest storylines. I hadn't spent a lot of time watching Cam Davis for the reasons I think you just pointed out, but solid, if not spectacular. I mean, he gets to a tour event and seems to me there's a lot of middle of the pack finishes, which you have to be very, very good to finish in the middle of the pack on the PGA Tour. The finish, though, I mean, there was nothing middle of the pack about what he did in regulation just to get into the playoff. He finished eagle birdie. I mean, it was a solid finish.
Hold out a bunker shot in the 71st hole.
I was just kind of looking at the distance on that just because I was a little bit curious. That was a 17-yard bunker shot at that. So not an easy, simple, straightforward bunker shot. And the fact that another playoff, which I think is pretty a pretty good sign for the PGA Tour. People want to talk about negative stories. This is such a good story. I will go to last week. And even though you and I talked about kind of the monotony of how they did their playoff, this time around, I think it showcased a really cool golf course that a lot of people probably don't spend a lot of time watching.
Yeah, another Donald Ross gem. I think some of these summer tournaments are easily forgotten. There's a lot going on. Kids are finally out of school. People are taking vacations. But to me, this is really a stretch that the golf diehards, if you're paying attention, kind of know and love. The Travelers Championship at TPC River Highlands, terrific golf course, Detroit Golf Club. ever since it burst back on the scene a couple years ago, has been an absolute delight to watch. On the European tour, of course, you have this Irish Open, Scottish Open, Open Championship swing, which is always one of my favorite. I was a little bit disappointed last week with Mount Juliet, which was the host site for the Irish Open. It is a Parkland golf course, very much the opposite of what you kind of want and expect when it comes to an Irish Open, Scottish Open, Open Championship swing. It basically looked like you were playing in Ohio in September. Balls were zipping back on the greens. Balls were kind of plopping down the fairways. That was a little bit disappointing. Nothing to take away, of course, from Lucas Hébert, who won his second European Tour event. But that kind of wasn't the golf that we were kind of knowing and loving. This week, Renaissance Club. Rex, you and I have played there at least once, I believe. Terrific whiskey. That certainly came to mind from our misadventure there. I believe there's a par three that's the caddy called the toughest par five in all of golf.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, right next to the clubhouse. Five. It is an absolutely stacked field. I think seven or eight of the top 10 in the world getting a head start, certainly on the time change adjustment, as well as their Lynx golf prep. You are heading out of the country. Normally we do like a 10-day boondoggle. That is not happening for multiple reasons this year, namely because I'm not going over at all.
I'll miss
with
you.
With the quarantine requirement in place and my wife 7.5 months pregnant. But that's neither here nor there. I will be very bitter on the podcast next week. Can you let the folks know at home exactly what you will be enduring when you finally do set sail and head off to London later this week?
It's not a visual medium here, but I'm going to... That's the FedEx box filled with tests that I have to take before, after, during.
Tests, plural.
Plural COVID-19 tests that I have to take before, after. They sent me extras because I think the idea is they know I'm going to mess something up. And it was, don't do anything until we call you, you buffoon. Like, just leave it all alone. Just be done with it. It might may or may not make it to the Open Championship. I'm certainly hoping so. So, and there's a lot of hoops to jump through, and understandably so. I think that they're going to have a lot of fans on property.
Understandably so. They're going to have 32,000 fans, and yet you've got to sit in your hotel room for 5 days.
Yes, yes. It's not going to be enjoyable, and it's a little surprising. And not from, I mean, this way it would be simple for me to sit around in my hotel room, which I'm sure I'll do, and complain. But I think, some players said something. I think Tommy Fleetwood had some comments last week about
Ricky Fowler as well. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's understandable that they want to make sure this is as safe as possible. And they want to make sure that everyone is abiding by whatever their protocols are. And I think the point here is their protocols are different than what the protocols have pretty much been on the PGA Tour. They're going to be more stringent. You're going to have to submit more tests. You're going to have to stay in your hotel. You're going to have to essentially go back to where we were last June, where you're going to be safer at home. They want you to eat in your hotel room. They want you to go to the golf course to play golf and do it all over again. And I think it's going to be hard for players. Like, again, forget about, no one cares what you and I are going to have to do. For the players, for the caddies, for everyone who has now gone through this for more than a year, I think it's going to be a really difficult slap in the face. And it's going to be a little bit more in a couple of weeks when we get to the Olympics. So I'll be curious to see players and caddies' attitudes after, let's say, this next month, when they get back to the PGA Tour and realize, man, the tour did a pretty good job.
You guys are certainly going to be in a good mood when I see him in Memphis after this Open Championship Olympic double. I think that's fair to say. So what is the itinerary? Because I think you do have to do a 5-day quarantine if I'm not mistaken.
I do. Yeah, we do. And so it'll be straight to Ramsgate, which is where we'll be staying for the week. And
Ramsgate, is that like the Marriott of London?
It's a town, and there is no Marriott. I believe it's a Comfort Inn, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm not even getting the points. How about that?
Wow. Comfort Inn. I'm sure that's wonderful. I know you're going to abide by the government rules, because we don't want to see you locked away in some kind of prison over there because they are very strict. But let's just say theoretically, you're able to get out and play some golf either before or after Open Championship week. Where will you play, or would you play, since this is purely a theoretical exercise?
Yeah, you've never done the Open down south, have you? Have you ever covered a St. George Open? Yeah, you have. Have you?
No, that was 2011 was the last time. Of course, when Darren Clark won, I did not cover that one.
So it's right next to each other, and it's sort of this cluster, which is normally the case. But in this particular case, the cluster is St. George's, where the Open will be. But then there's Prince's right next door, and then there's Royal Cinque-Ports. I never played Prince's, but Royal Cinque-Ports is an amazing place, and it's a lot of history there. It's a fun golf course to play. If, in theory, there's a way for me to leave my room and to not have to stay in the Comfort Inn, in theory, if that's allowed, then absolutely, that's where you'll find me.
And then what's – so obviously you cover the tournament. Flying back Monday, probably get in to Orlando mid-afternoon on Monday. Then when do you leave for Tokyo?
I believe I'm home for 3 days. Like, and that's where the box of tests come into play, because not only are they for the Open Championship, but you also have to start testing 72 hours before you get on a plane to go to Tokyo. So there's going to be a lot of testing for me in my immediate future.
So you'll see your family for – 4 days in the next month?
Yeah, that's about it.
How does your wife feel about that? Is she, I mean, my wife has her own issues right now as I bark at her about the second TV not working. How does your wife feel about leaving her alone with three boys this summer?
I don't know that your wife would be all that upset, as she is how many months pregnant now, and you're barking
seven,
at her?
Seven
and a half months pregnant, and you're barking at her about the TV not working? Sounds like a her problem, I think, is the line you threw at me when you got on the
Zoom call. She is the one who set it up. I didn't set it up. I don't have knowledge of this. I don't know what the inner workings are.
I don't either, but I know better than to complain. It's more you have to ease into that. Hey, any idea why the TV not working? Chop, chop.
I mean, I've got my own issues. We have Tropical Storm Elsa bearing down on our sweet, sweet town of Nocatee. So I think my afternoon is going to be spent taking down all of the things that I just put up outside over the past couple of weeks.
Your so first fun. Hurricane in the new house. That's it. And since you brought it up, and you mentioned this before, but I wanted to circle back around to it. Your tweet that you sent out last week about this is the most enjoyable time of year for you to watch TV, yes, because of that Irish Open, Scottish Open, Open Championship run. I could almost see the air going out of that tweet after you posted it, because, like, I don't think you realized when you tweeted it out that it was Mount Juliet, which is a Parkland course.
I did, but I've never seen Mount Juliet, so I was like, oh, surely that's going to be a terrific golf course. Now the tip off,
the Renaissance
been...
Club, which is not a classic course, which is a fun course. You and I put it out, but it's not the classic course that everyone's probably used to.
It's not classic links like pressed hard against the water, but you still have to play links shots over there. That's certainly better prep for Royal St. George's than Mount Juliet was. I mean, Mount Juliet, I'm not joking. If you guys didn't have an opportunity to watch, it literally looked like you were playing in Ohio in like September or October. It was kind of gray. It was dreary. It was lush. The rough was thick. There was tall trees. I mean, it was generous fairways. That is not what I came to expect when I flipped on the TV. I was like, oh, this kind of sucks.
I saw your tweet, and I could almost see your shoulders slump, and then right afterwards, this isn't what I wanted to do. No, this doesn't work at all.
I mean, I still watch, but I did not enjoy it as much as I usually do.
All right, check out the Renaissance Club. It is a very, very good links course. I think it's the ninth hole is the most difficult par three in the world, from what the caddy told.
I thought it was like middle of, because I thought the routing was different. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it was nine, because
it was right
had
next
to redo
clubhouse.
The routing, because it was right next to the clubhouse. We took a shot. We took a shot of whiskey before we took that on.
As you should always do. But it may or may not be there to watch it on the weekend. I may or may not be in the UK. We'll see when we tune back in. But for all the news, check out golfchannel.com. We'll talk to you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.